if in your data set there's a lot of movies about movie reviews that are written by white people, for example, then your model might only learn to classify reviews written by white people really well, but then they're not able to classify reviews written by people of, you know, from other backgrounds.
Hello, and welcome to Generation Slay. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you so much for having me here.
I am so excited to have you on. And just to kick things off, can you tell the wonderful people who you are and a little bit about your background?
My name is Yada. I am currently a machine learning researcher at Amazon Alexa, working on fairness and bias of machine learning models. So that's my day job. And in just as a quick summary of kind of how I got here, I'm originally from Thailand and worked in more nonprofit space before coming into computer science and going to grad school for that. So definitely, you know, didn't start always, you know, being a coder or doing math since I was a child. So yeah, definitely can also talk about that later as well.
Amazing. I just want to start with the basics because I am not deep into tech knowledge and I'm sure a lot of our listeners aren't as well. So can you kind of talk me through what machine learning is at a basic level and what it means to be working on fairness and bias in relation to machine learning?
Yes. So machine learning is basically the family of methods that teaches machines how to learn how to do things. So, and this is usually through, you know, teaching them how to pick up on various trends in the data to be able to learn to do different things. So, you know, just as an example, you might want to classify and teach a machine how to differentiate between, you know, good reviews and bad reviews of movies. So you would pass in, you know, into an algorithm, you know, various examples of good movie reviews where people loved the movie, and then bad movie reviews, and then with the labels. So you would explicitly, you know, show the machine examples and say if it's good or bad. And then the machine would learn to pick up how to, you know, given a new example that you don't have the label to, it would then predict if it's good or bad. So you know, machine learning is kind of how the methods behind how you actually teach the model, you know, to be able to differentiate between good or bad reviews or to learn various tasks.
That is wild. It's so cool that, like, obviously people are behind that, but it's so cool that you are partially behind that. So in building these models, when do these issues of bias come up? Is it a result of the people making it? Is it just a result of machines being machines and not having the same sensibilities or like EQ that humans have? And how do you kind of temper that and balance that out?
So this is a question that, you know, is still an open question. But, you know, from what people have studied, a lot of this bias definitely stems from the data sources. So if your data set is biased, say, you know, in your data set, there's a lot of, let's just take the example of sentiment again. So if in your data set, there's a lot of movies about movie reviews that are written by white people, for example, then your model might only learn to classify reviews written by white people really well, but then they're not able to classify reviews written by people of, you know, from other backgrounds. So there's definitely, you know, that data set bias there. And where that comes from is, you know, just looking at the data out there. Like sometimes it's very, you know, if you're not very intentional about making sure that there's no correlations or that there's no, you know, representational bias in your data set, it's, you know, it's easy to kind of overlook these biases in your data set, which then feeds into the model, and then your model learns these biases then as well.
Thank you for explaining this all in a way that I can understand. I feel like I am gaining so much knowledge right now. Thank you. You're turning me into a genius. I appreciate it immensely. So at Amazon Alexa, when you're working on these kinds of projects, what is that like? I don't know how much, obviously, you can talk about, like, your day-to-day work, because I'm sure there's a lot of like projects and whatnot that aren't to be discussed, but kind of in a broader range of things, what's a day working in machine learning at Amazon like?
So there's a lot to unpack in that question. So there's kind of like the day-to-day, and then there's also kind of, you know, what is it like to, you know, try to solve these problems of bias in models. And so I'll just address the first one first. So day in a life is probably a lot more boring in some ways than what you see in like movies about machine learning or, you know, articles about AI. But it's definitely, you know, part of machine learning work is definitely just, you know, running a lot of experiments. So, you know, now in industry, you have to talk with different stakeholders. So, you know, people in different teams and program managers and other people to really try to figure out how machine learning can be used for their use cases. And I can't go into that much detail because obviously NDA and all of that. So a lot of the work revolves around just understanding business needs and then, you know, looking into the research, reading papers, a little bit of what, you know, I've been doing in grad school before this, and then figuring out ways that we can evaluate models and make sure that they're unbiased.
That's amazing. For people who are super interested by everything you just said, who think that that may be the path for them, tech, machine learning, working on these models, what kind of recommendations or suggestions would you have for them in terms of what to learn, what to read, what to work on, what skills to develop?
Yeah, I would say for general machine learning, there's so much out there. Like there's a lot of, you know, Udemy courses and Kaggle competitions. So I would just say if you're interested, just start there. And there's an amazing community of people who are learning together. And if you are more interested in actually like diving deep and really understanding the state of the art, then I definitely think grad school is also a good avenue if you can afford it or if that's a possibility for you. I also know that it's, you know, a lot of schools like NYU, where I went for grad school, also have open virtual courses that you can take. So yeah, definitely check that out. And I'm also happy to link some if you want to paste that there in the description.
1000%. That is so, so helpful. And I kind of want to hop into the next topic that I really want to touch on with you, because there is so much conversation, especially right now in culture. Just as a heads up for the people, we're recording this in early February. The world could change by whenever you're listening to this, I think in March. But that being said, there is a lot of conversation around technology and how it impacts people's lives. And I think a lot of the discourse is around how it impacts people's lives negatively at this point. And I know that you do a lot of work about personal development and public well-being and how tech can actually help people live happier and healthier lives. And so I would love to hear your take on just kind of the general discourse and assumption that tech is inherently bad for people that's kind of going on right now, and then also the different projects you're working on and why you believe that it can be used to make people's lives better.
Yeah. I think this is interesting because, you know, as a scientist, one of the things that you care about is you don't want what you're building to be used for bad. And this is with any, you know, any new technology. And it's hard to control for that. So it's definitely kind of a balancing act between, you know, like, do the pros weigh the cons? Are the use cases for good, you know, more far reaching than the bad use cases? And you definitely see, especially as, you know, machine learning is getting more powerful, and, you know, with OpenAI and, you know, all of these new models that are able to generate, you know, fake videos or images that are shockingly real and realistic, it's, you know, the community and the research community is definitely thinking about how to gate these models and how to gate these, you know, capabilities so that they're not used for bad purposes. So, yeah, this is definitely an interesting question. And I guess aside from kind of the up and coming capabilities of machine learning, I definitely think that, you know, that ML is already being used for good. And, you know, you see that with customer support, in terms of companies using it to make sure that, you know, people are doing better at their jobs. And you definitely see some use cases in healthcare as well. And, you know, startups like Talkspace starting to use machine learning to help them, you know, better match patients with and clients with therapists. So there's definitely, you know, use cases that are coming up. And I think there also are a lot of bad use cases, like with the ICE, you know, using it, and police using it in some countries to track down protesters and all of that. So, you know, it's definitely a balancing act. And I think it really necessitates, you know, everyone's voices, scientists, policymakers, and business people, everyone, to really make sure that, you know, the guardrails are there to make sure that, you know, we use this new technology and especially, you know, machine learning in a way that ultimately benefits people more than hurt people.
That totally makes sense. And I totally agree. I also really appreciate that you have such a balanced perspective on how it can be positive and how it can be negative, because I know, you know, a lot of the times working in any industry or with any specific tool or technology, it can be very hard to not become biased on behalf of it just because you're so involved. So I love and appreciate your perspective. Looking at the more positive side of things, the talk spaces and all of that, what are your thoughts about where machine learning is going to develop and move forward in a positive direction in the future? Where do you think it can have large impacts? Where do you think it may evolve? I'm fascinated by your knowledge, and I just like want to know everything you think may happen.
Yeah, I mean, you might have to stop me there because I can go on and on, but in terms of, you know, really big possibilities, I think there's so many possibilities in healthcare, especially because what machine learning is good at is repetitive tasks. Like, it's never going to replace humans, especially for human-focused things like therapy or counseling or coaching. Like, these things are inherently human, and it's too much to ask a machine to do. But, you know, things like being able to check if or like extract medication lists from a patient summary, or making sure that you know, that different diagnosis codes are tagged in properly tagged in you know, in the EHR system, like those types of things that help, you know, that are part of the healthcare process. Those, I think there's a lot of possibility and potential for machine learning to help, you know, help make that smoother for physicians and for clinicians. And, you know, and that really impacts, you know, continuity of care, making sure people aren't misdiagnosed, or, you know, just making sure that people are getting the help that they need in the healthcare system. So that's one area that I'm super excited about. And also, you know, just outside of that, just the potential of machine learning to help make people better at their jobs. So just thinking about customer support, if you're able to surface, you know, different ways that, you know, the customer support people can help the clients that they're helping. Like that's, you know, that augmented approach I'm very excited about. And I think that's kind of where machine learning is going, where it's augmenting human workflows rather than replacing it.
I am obsessed with that, especially that healthcare perspective, the first one, because obviously there's a lot of flaws in the current system we have. So just anything that'll move us forward and help a greater portion of people will be hopefully very beneficial and very exciting for the general pop. So that is very exciting. You're getting me all excited about machine learning and the tech future over here. So thank you for sharing your knowledge.
Of course. Yeah, it's definitely a really exciting field. Definitely, you know, again, like I said, a lot of, you know, things that we have to figure out, making sure that there's no bias, that people don't, that the models don't accidentally leak someone's private information. But yeah, like the possibilities for it is definitely endless.
It's amazing. I love this conversation so much. And I feel like in the next year, I'm going to need to have you back just to, you know, explain all the new things that have happened, because I know that machine learning and tech and what's possible evolves so rapidly at this rate, thanks to amazing scientists like you. So thank you for your work. Thank you for your perspective. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the pod.
Thank you so much, Emma. And yeah, I would love to, you know, be back and in the next year.
We love it. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Generation Slay. This is actually the last episode of our season, as we are transferring over to more live conversation Q&A vibes with the Gen Z creators, innovators, and entrepreneurs who continue to kill it and inspire us every single day. So to stay in touch, feel free to follow us at Generation Slay on Instagram and Twitter. Follow me at Emma Havi on all the socials, but especially Clubhouse, to partake in those conversations. Thank you all so much for being part of this journey, and keep an eye out because I have some fun stuff coming your way in the podcast realm as well. Keep slaying, y'all. I believe in you, and I'll talk to you very soon. Bye.